Dr. Brown, welcome to Earth and Sky. Can you tell me a little bit about the recent determination by your science team of the mass of the dwarf planet Eris?
One of the things we really wanted to do was to measure the mass, to weigh Eris. We got lucky in that Eris has a moon going around it. And by tracking the orbit of the moon around the dwarf planet, you actually get to weigh how much the dwarf planet weighs. So if it goes around really fast, it means that it's heavy. If it goes around much slower, it's very light. And you can actually do that very precisely. And so we now know precisely how much it weighs, and it turns out that it's about 27% more massive than Pluto, and the uncertainty there is only about 2%. So this was the sort of last chance that Pluto had, and now it's definitely smaller and less massive.
Well, let's talk about this moon. It's called Dysnomia.
That's right.
I believe. What do we know about this moon? What do we know about Dysnomia? And could you tell me a little bit more about what it's telling us about the dwarf planet Eris?
We actually know very little about the moon itself because it's so small and it's so far away. It's maybe 150 kilometers across, much, much smaller than our moon, for example. And we just barely see it with our best images from the Hubble Space Telescope still just show it as a very faint blip of light right next to Eris. And so the only things we know about it are what it tells us about Eris itself, telling us about the mass of Eris, and also the sort of orbit that it has going around Eris. So it's in a very circular orbit around Eris, and we think that that's telling us something important. We think that it actually formed much in the same way that the Earth and Moon formed, that some sort of large object hit both of these things in the distant past and made a big cloud of debris that coalesced to form the Moon. And we think the same thing happened for Eris and Dysnomia.
Earth and Sky recently talked with a scientist about the Mercury, about the messenger mission to Mercury, how the Mercury ended up very much different than Venus or the Earth. Could you tell me a little bit about the dwarf planet Eris? Is it unusual compared to its neighbors?
In some ways, I would almost call it a twin of Pluto, only a slightly pudgier twin now that we know that it's a little bit more massive. But they're very similar in size, and one is just a little bit bigger. They have the same materials on their surface, it looks like. So Pluto, we've known for a long time, has a surface that's covered in methane and natural gas and in frozen nitrogen and in frozen carbon monoxide. And Eris appears to have the same sorts of thing on its surface. The interesting thing about Eris, though, compared to Pluto, is Eris is so much further away than Pluto is that Pluto has a little bit of an atmosphere. And if you were to take Pluto and move it out to where Eris is, all that atmosphere would freeze onto the surface. And so on Eris, it looks like there's no atmosphere at all, and it's just a little layer of frost instead. But as Eris comes back in, Eris is on a 580-year orbit around the sun. So when it comes back in closer to the sun in another 290 years, if you can wait that long, all those frosts will start to boil on the surface and eventually become an atmosphere again. So it's over the course of its orbit, it has dramatic differences in the temperatures and in the surfaces and the atmosphere. So it's an interesting place to study for that.
How can you tell what the mass of this object is that's way out there by just looking at an even tinier little blip orbiting it?
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to Newton, essentially. We did the same thing that we just used Newton's theories of gravity and our understanding of orbital dynamics to be able to measure it. In fact, it's the same thing that was done early on to measure the masses of all of the planets. We first knew how much Jupiter weighed because people looked at the moons of Jupiter and saw how fast they go around it. So the way we actually do it is we look at Eris and Dysnomia and we follow it over the course of its orbit. It's about a 16-day orbit, and we carefully plot that orbit, and then we can calculate exactly how much mass Eris has to have to make it have that orbit go that fast and that far away. And it took us a couple of years to actually do it because we didn't get a chance to just watch it for 16 days in a row, but we have a combination of about 6 or 7 different little points around the orbit that we can now fit together to form a nice, perfect circle around it.
And I guess in being able to determine the mass of Eris, you're also able to tell just how dense it is. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, since we knew the size from those measurements we made about a year ago, now that we know the mass, we also know the density. The density that we measured is a little bit larger than the density of Pluto, although there's an uncertainty on the density because there's an uncertainty on the size that makes it essentially the same as Pluto. And so Pluto, we have known for a while, has a density of about it looks like it's made out of about half ice and half rock. So just like the Earth has an iron core on the inside with rock on the outside, we think that these things out there have a rocky core on the inside and then an ice on the outside. And it looks like, again, Dysnomia looks just like Pluto in that way, too. So it's actually interesting. Pluto, for such a long time, was kind of this oddball at the edge of the solar system, and there was nothing else like it, and it was very difficult to study. And now we have two of these that are almost the same, and in fact, we have two or three more that look very similar to both of these. So it's exciting to get to see this new class of objects that we didn't really know anything about before.
This icy coating, are we talking water ice, or...?
Yeah, the icy coating, the main components would be just rock and then water ice, and then a little layer of this frozen methane and this frozen nitrogen on the outside.
I'd like to ask you a hypothetical question here.
Sure.
And it's about Mercury. Now it looks like Mercury is the smallest kid on the block. Let's say that your team, you know, was able to find an object in the Kuiper Belt or in the even further out, you know, which the Kuiper Belt's way out there, but even more further out in the Oort cloud. That's, you know, bigger than or more dense. You know, it's bigger. It's more massive than Mercury. You know, would you like to comment on that? What would that mean?
Yeah, you've been reading my mind, apparently. this is what we're trying to do for very good reasons. I actually think that these objects are out there in the region, not of the Kuiper Belt. We pretty much finished most of our scanning of the Kuiper Belt, and I don't think there are going to be too many other large things found in the Kuiper Belt. But in this region beyond the Kuiper Belt that we know very, very little about, the inner Oort cloud, where we know of one object that we found while we were looking at the Kuiper Belt, this region must have some very large objects in it, many objects the size of Pluto, and maybe even some that are the size, as you say, maybe of Mercury or maybe the size of Mars. I suspect, now if you go by the strict definition that the IAU accepted last summer, if you find something like that, the size of Mars or the size of Mercury, in this region of the inner Oort cloud, it will not be called a planet. It will be a dwarf planet. And I find that just sort of amusing to think that there would be dwarf planets that are bigger than planets, which aren't dwarfs. And I suspect that that would cause problems once again, and the arguments would start up all over again, and I even think that that would probably change the definition of planet once again. So we're actually looking not because we're interested in changing the definition of planet, because we're actually looking because we think scientifically this is there's some interesting things out there, but it's the added bonus is that it'd be kind of funny to watch the astronomers go through all this process over again if we find something else.
You mentioned arguments and this news and the decisions to kind of demote Pluto. It's kind of raised a lot of emotions about it. I'd like to ask you, though, how does it feel to, I guess, I don't know how to put this, but I mean, I'd almost have discovered a planet.
I don't know. I'm still not sure. It has really settled in. I think that if it had actually been a planet, it also would have, of course, felt very different. Not because it actually would have made any difference whatsoever to what I discovered, but it just would have been, it would have sunk in a little deeper, I think. As it is, it's a very hard question to answer. It's what I do, and I, you know, hope to find more, and then when we find them, we'll study them, and then we'll find more, and it just feels like that's what I do. It's not a very good answer, but that's how it feels.
The IAU made the decision back in September 2006, and it's still kind of reverberating even in the public's mind and blogs and people.
Oh, yeah.
People still talk about it. Would you like to comment on that? How do you feel about that decision right now?
I feel very strongly that that was precisely the right decision. And saying that, you know, means that I think that it was correct that Eris, which was some people call the 10th planet for a while, that it became also a dwarf planet too. And so I had a lot at stake. Had they decided that Pluto was a planet and Eris would have been a planet, I could have said I discovered a planet, but it was not the right thing to do. I actually did not think that the astronomers in Prague last summer would have the guts to demote Pluto, but everybody who looks at it from a dispassionate point of view comes to the same conclusion that Pluto really does not belong as part of the group of eight planets. It makes much, much more sense as part of the group of the Kuiper Belt. And so I actually, not only do I think it was the right choice, I actually really enjoy the discussions that are ongoing. I enjoy the fact that if I go sit on an airplane and somebody asks what I do and I tell them I'm an astronomer, the first question they ask me is about Pluto. They don't even know who I am. They just know I'm an astronomer. They ask me about Pluto, and you cannot have a conversation with somebody about Pluto without teaching them about how the solar system is put together. You have to explain why the eight planets are so much bigger and so much more dynamically important than all the rest of these. And so it's this great opportunity to teach people about how the solar system works. And I have really enjoyed it this last year.
Dr. Brown, thank you again for taking this time out to speak with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.